From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International, it's Meet Your Mind, a user's guide to the science of consciousness, a special series from To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, Mind and Brain.
The brain is made up of billions of neurons. Neurons are the cells of the brain. Every neuron is connected to about 10,000 of its neighbors. If you were to take a very tiny chunk of brain tissue, a cubic millimeter of brain tissue, there are more connections in there than there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Now, the weird part is we look at this very complex machinery, you know, it sort of is got the consistency of mashed potatoes, and somehow all that wet, gushy stuff is us.
The idea that there is a thing inside of us that thinks and feels and decides, and that each of us is that thing. Descartes thought it was the immaterial soul, but we really don't have any better idea how the brain gives rise to consciousness than we do how the immaterial soul substance of Descartes does.
What strikes me so much about the octopus brain is that 3/5 of their neurons are not in the brain at all. They're in the arms. They're so different from us. They can taste with their skin. You can sever their arms, and the arms will go off hunting by themselves. I mean, can you imagine that kind of diffuse consciousness?
Spend a little time looking into debates over the nature of consciousness, and you'll quickly come across the name of David Chalmers. He's an Australian philosopher who wrote a seminal paper in 1995 on what he called the hard problem of consciousness, why we have subjective experience, you know, thoughts and feelings, the experience of joy or sorrow, self-awareness. Chalmers believes science will never be able to explain this, but that claim has sparked a loud and often nasty debate among scientists and philosophers. Steve Paulson recently caught up with David Chalmers.
You are widely regarded as one of the leading philosophers of the mind. Why do you keep coming back to questions about consciousness, a subject you've now been studying for decades?
Well, for me, consciousness poses just about the most interesting unsolved problems in the world. I mean, I came at this from a background in science and mathematics. Although physics and mathematics are still exciting today, there was a sense they were more exciting a few hundred years ago when everything was unknown. And it just struck me that the problem right now that stands out as being unknown, unsolved, is problems of the mind. And in particular, the problem of consciousness. How is it that physical processes in a brain give you conscious experience? It's just always fascinated me.
So you're saying the science of the mind is perhaps the last great unanswered question in science, maybe in philosophy too?
I mean, there's lots of small unanswered questions and even pretty big ones. But if you want to go for a place where we really don't have a clue, I think it's in the problems of the mind. Well, it's an ancient philosophical problem, the mind-body problem. What's the relationship between mind and body? And in its contemporary guise, what's the relationship between the brain and consciousness? And we're still just coming to grips with that one.
Now, if you talk to brain scientists, most will say it's just a matter of time before science unlocks the mysteries of the mind. And they usually say neuroscience is the path to do this. I mean, this is the discipline that will crack the puzzle of consciousness. What do you think?
I think it's reasonable to think that brain science and neuroscience is going to be a huge component of whatever the ultimate solution is. But I think it's also, if you talk to, you know, some of those brain scientists, maybe late at night, off the record, I think you'll find that there's about as big a diversity of opinion among brain scientists about the problem of consciousness as there is among philosophers. That is, almost everyone will recognize that, at least right now, we're not even close. There's just this basic mystery. How is it that all this processing in the brain gives rise to first-person subjective experience? You know, the feeling of seeing, of hearing, this inner movie that we have in our mind.
So why is this hard problem of consciousness so hard? I mean, why is it so hard for science, for neuroscience, for cognitive science to explain this subjective experience, this first-person experience?
One way to think about it is that science is set up from the start to be objective. We gather our data, and we can all make the same measurements, and that works so well in physics, biology, even some areas of the science of the mind. But consciousness, by its nature, is subjective. It's not something you can directly measure. I don't even know for sure when I'm talking to you that you're conscious. I believe you are. I take what you say as some kind of evidence for it, but I can't measure it directly. We can only get at it indirectly. So when I think about this, science is basically all about gathering what we might call third-person data, traditionally, data equally accessible to everyone. Consciousness really involves what we might think of as first-person data.
Are you talking about the limits of materialism? I mean, the idea that the mental is nothing more than brain mechanics. Is that part of your critique here?
It is, yes. You know, one of the big issues in the philosophy of the mind is, well, is the mind just the brain? I mean, is a physical processes enough to explain what's in your mind and what's in your consciousness? And I've been, you know, somewhat reluctantly led to the conclusion that, in fact, materialism doesn't have the resources to fully explain consciousness. I mean, the materialist view says basically there's a few fundamental properties in the world, space and time and mass and charge, and a few laws that connect them, and everything can ultimately be explained in terms of that.
Yeah, everything in chemistry, biology, ultimately can be reduced to the properties
right.
of physics.
But when it comes to consciousness, this reductionist program doesn't succeed. So my own view is we should take something like consciousness as a primitive element of the world, a fundamental property, if you like, in the way that physics takes space and time and mass and charge.
Now, that's fascinating. I mean, you're suggesting that consciousness may have its own fundamental property of nature, so to speak?
Basically, yes. Maybe some other weird property, some other weird new property, proto-consciousness, which could somehow produce consciousness. But we do need to expand the ontology of fundamental properties. That's my view. It's, you know, physics is meant to be a theory of everything, fundamental properties that explains everything. But if it turns out it doesn't, what we have to do as scientists is to expand our primitives.
So what would that fundamental property of consciousness be?
Well, at this point, we really don't know. So I mean, we're really in the realm of speculation, and I get to do this speculation because I'm a philosopher, but I can't say we're not remotely close yet to the point where we have the details of a theory. I mean, I'll be happy if we have it in 50 years. You know, it could be 200 years, but for a fundamental theory of consciousness, what you need is a theory that connects these fundamental physical properties like space, time, charge, and so on to consciousness. We don't have that theory yet, but if we did, maybe that would be a theory of consciousness.
David Chalmers is a philosopher at the Australian National University. You'll find Steve's full uncut interview with Chalmers on our website at ttbook.org/meetyourmind.